Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And Jules Gill.
Hey, guys.
And we've both been playing two of the biggest games, one soon to come out, one that's out right now, and is a big old blazing fire of things and opinions. But we're gonna eventually talk about Sekiro, because let's end on a positive. But we might as well open with Anthem. Now, all three of us have it. You've still not been able to get in because the servers have been a bit of a mess.
Now, I've had a few problems, because when I got the PC review code, I couldn't connect at all. Then we thought that it was a problem to do with works administration and stuff here, so took it home, tried to play it, still had a lot of connection issues. Finally got into two matches, and they both timed out, and they dropped out, and the frame rate was so bad, and I thought, okay, maybe it's my PC. Then I looked in, and I was like, nope, more than meets the recommended requirements. Looked online, and everyone was talking about the same thing. If they were in the game, it was a success, as in they were raving about it, saying, I'm in the game. And then the question came with, so how are you finding it? And then the lots of people's opinion.
There's a lot. There's so much to unpack, and I'm going to do a whole editorial on it, because I think the overwhelming feel of corporate influence is just so nakedly obvious, so brazenly poisonous, that it drags everything down. But there are clearly talented people working at BioWare, and occasionally that comes through. And so, in fact, we might as well open with a few more open general thoughts, good Sir Josh.
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, maybe it's because I went in with little to non-expectations of it being good. But there is a lot that I've been really genuinely enjoying. It has a lot of problems for sure, but the general gameplay loop for me is actually quite satisfying.
Yes.
I was going to state as well that it's not going to be one of those things where we're just going to bag on a game for no reason, because it's there are elements in it which have been a bit shady and a bit broken and a bit dull. And a lot of people comparing it to Destiny. Mm-hmm. I would say that's a very, very apt comparison, because it's trying to emulate a lot of what successes that game had.
Yeah.
But we have to admit that this isn't necessarily the game that BioWare promised. I mean, I don't suppose you guys have been keeping up on all of the different trailers that they've been releasing. So there was the Hero Tell Your Own Story trailer. I can't remember if that's the official name for it.
Well, there's a few things to address. This might be a whole separate thing, but there are things to address in terms of the way that it was advertised. The idea of this constantly streaming world. You'll never have to have a load screen. Total lie.
And also all the choices that you were going to make.
Choices. It would be...
Again, it doesn't boil down to anything.
Nope.
Yeah.
And say, it would be your... Because I've finished the story now. So it's like, you'd make meaningful relationships with different characters, and you'll meet them at Fort Tarsis, and you'll go forward, and it'll meaningfully impact you. Once again, Casey Hudson putting those things out, which is the dude that said all the things about Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
It'll not be an ABC ending, literally an ABC ending. And it's not throwing him under the bus. I'm sure he's doing his best. Obviously, he's doing his best. But it's interesting that this has happened multiple times now. And even then, on top of to address the more weird corporate shady side of it, Anthem had four different, I think it was four different release dates.
Because it was like a staggered release, wasn't it? For for people who had a special edition of this, and then it was a closed beta on this weekend.
It was
very strange.
If you paid the most money, you got the worst version of the game, because you got the one that was available a week before the public. That was one that was on Origin Access.
Oh, yes.
That was the £80 or dollar, whatever, the most expensive one. But then they came out and said, we're going to do a big day one patch. And it's like, your day one is a week before you're calling it. And by saying, the version... And also, the day one patch was very sizable, fixed a whole lot of stuff, changed the Tomb of the Legionnaires mission, which is the worst mission in gaming history. And it's horrible.
It is bad.
And it now tracks it from like level 3.
Changed the way that it tracks. If you don't know what Tomb of the Legionnaires is, there's a roadblock about a third of the way through where you need to go access this ancient javelin, this thing that you need to do the next part of the story. And it's gated behind four different tombs. But to get into the tombs, it's four separate goals each. But they're all busy work. They're all find 15 treasure chests, do 30 melee kills, do whatever. It would literally be like stopping Assassin's Creed and going, go find the feathers, and then we'll let you do the rest.
I got really annoyed about that in particular because it was, I understand if you have gameplay requirements to get into sort of like say a treasure trove or something like that, mm-hmm. but they have to be connected to the actual thing that it is. So say, for example, you want to take on Lord Cluckington, who is an 80-foot tall Godzilla-style
hen.
Chicken.
Which I do.
Yeah. Hen, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I always want to,
So therefore, you would expect it to be collecting eggs or smashing eggs or killing chickens and stuff like that. That would make sense because it relates to that. Mm-hmm. If you're just like, okay, you need to get into this tomb by opening treasure chest, how does the treasure chest track that you've opened? That it doesn't make any sense.
They call it being worthy. And so you've got these like four... you've got these like... Because another thing as well, there are many, many... It's death by a thousand cuts, but then every now and then one of those cuts is a big old stab to the heart. And so like, there's lots of little things, like the menu systems are a complete mess. Tracking those goals is a big deal. I initially thought you had to walk up to each tomb to bring up the list of requirements, and the voice is like, you've been deemed not worthy, so go do some other stuff.
Like the gates from Fable.
Kind of,
you can't get into it now.
But less cool. And then you've got like, these weird, just, I don't know, it makes me think that something went so wrong in development, because I wonder what Anthem initially was. You go back to those original teasers and those original trailers, the idea that it was, you know, you're this hero looking after four Tarsus, you have your javelin, you're going to customize it, you're going to go do all these things, and they even said like you'll find things in the open world you can bring back to NPCs, have all these relationships, all these meaningful conversations. None of that's in there.
Well,
so
this is the fascinating thing for me, because a lot of those ambitions that they had, I'm sure were solid at some point when they were creating the game, and you can sort of see it come through, like when they said you'd meet a lot of people in like the Four Tarsus and like you'd make a lot of relationships. They tried to do that, I think, especially at the beginning. They throw so many people at you and like so many conversations, and the problem isn't that it's not there, it's just that it's not really compelling. Like when I'm talking to these people, I had a similar problem with Metro Exodus recently, where they're just kind of like talking at me and my inputs, it's not a compelling conversation like system. I'm just not really interested in these people. Maybe it's because they're throwing too much at me at once, which I did. I am feeling that in a way, like there's a lot of lore, there's a lot of people to get to know.
I mean, it doesn't help as well that they're quite annoying.
Like that Owen guy is such a...
The constant chattering that comes to you, it's like... Yeah. I can't remember who I was watching do a little like piece on it, but they said it's like being at a comedy club when you don't want to be at a comedy club. Because it's there like, hey, I've got a joke to say. It's there like, God, you're not on a What Culture video, chill out.
There's one of the weirdest things, which I think it came from the first Avengers movie. Like that weird way, that sort of the mainstream way of doing comedy, where it's like, okay, we're going to do comedy. Even if we're not comedic writers, this is where we're going to put a joke. And Anthem has that like to the nth degree. Like it's like quips per minute is like 10 or whatever it is. Every other line is a nonchalant, like, oh, well, why don't we just take care of this? And hey, remember the last time we did this? It's really like just milk toasty, like just nothing's memorable in there. To counter the thing you said about characters, though, like I think it's Halleck is maybe the one you're referring to, the old dude, the retired old Javelin guy.
I was more talking about your mate Owen, because get him non-stop in the opening. Yeah,
there's they do one thing with Owen that makes that pay off.
Okay.
But it's, their general approach, like, here's your cast, is that you're a silent protagonist. Well, you're mostly a silent protagonist. You occasionally talk to you might as well be a silent protagonist. And so everyone's just talking at you. And I saw Jeff Gerstmann on Giant Bomb talk about it. It made him think of old, FMV games, where everyone has to acknowledge that you're there by just looking at you every now and then. And it's just that it feels like a stage play. It's like they're all looking at you for, like, no reason.
But I have no problem with the silent protagonist. I think that there are...
He's not really.
I just think that I think that to use that as a point of criticism against this game is probably a bit moot, because there's been many other games that have used the silent protagonist that we don't bag on for that. But that's only because it gives you choice in how you respond, whereas I feel this is very limited.
Well, you have a choice, respond. But it's they all go one or the
same,
other.
I mean, they all go the same route at the end of the day.
The only thing that is the only thing that's remote to give them, because it's weird, because like something like you sort of go, okay, what do they promise? What do they talk about? What's actually in the game? And the only way that the idea of your choices matter works is that sometimes at the end of a dialogue string, they'll reference something you said at the beginning be like, oh, that's why I should, like, I don't know, go talk to that person I haven't talked to for years or whatever. And it's like, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
That's
I'm not as far in it as you are. But when I'm like engaging in these conversations, sometimes I'll get a little prompt like, oh, you've increased your reputation with or loyalty with this faction.
Yeah.
I'm like, is that all I'm doing in this conversation? What?
A blueprint for a gun that looks exactly the same as the one you start with. The loot system.
Yeah.
This is where it gets really fundamentally broken. Because, like, well, not broken, but just fundamentally empty. That's why I think something went wrong in development. Because for a game that's a loot shooter, a loot system, all the guns are nigh on visibly identical. And even the gun that you get 30 out, well, I mean, I finished it in like 10 hours. So even the guns I get at the end are exactly the same as the ones I get at the beginning, other than their damage status higher. They look the same. Like, you can get ones that have different, very small, visually identifiably mods. But it's nothing.
Because that was where Borderlands' strength lied, in the fact that it was lots of visual differences to make you feel like everything you were getting was at least worth looking testing out in the field. Mm-hmm. So I don't like the fact that they feel like it's limiting you on that, with just like, here's, it just does more damage.
It's a machine gun, and the one you'll get later is also a machine gun, but at the end of its clip, it might give you a 10% shield boost.
I mean, this is the thing. It sounds like we're just going to rag on this game, but Josh said that he had a good experience when he was playing with it sometimes.
That's it.
Same.
In terms of when the gameplay is good, it's very good. I mean, I love the freedom of movement. I think that's a fantastic addition to a third-person shooter. Not too keen on enemies that completely heat you up so quickly, because that happened way too often.
Well, you overheat in 20 seconds.
But again, I do feel like being able to flip about the map is good.
That's great,
That is good. And I like the approach to combat, like with, you know, you teaming up with different mates with different javelin suits that have different powers. Mm. Like, on paper, because it sounds like I'm describing Destiny, I like that. I liked how Destiny played.
Yeah. Well, there was a moment really early on when I first jumped in, and again, had no expectations of how this was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I was, I think, the Storm Javelin, who can sort of summon elemental attacks. Yeah. I was thrown down this lightning, and then I was sort of freezing dudes, and I was getting my ultimate out and whacking them, and I was like, this is so satisfying. I'm zipping around, I'm like kind of floating around, looking cool as all hell. And I was like, maybe this game's really, really good.
Yeah.
And it... there's a call there that is really good, but like we said, there are so many roadblocks that come into play. Mm. And I think we're touching on a very good point there, Jules, where you mentioned the comparison to Destiny.
Yes.
Because obviously this game has tried to address problems with Destiny, especially in the sort of character and personality of it, and trying to give you people to actually engage with and a story to follow. Like, it is there. It's there to dive into. It might not be good, but it's there. Mm. But in so many other ways, they fail to fix problems that the original Destiny made 5 years ago. And that's the most frustrating part. If this game came out when the loot shooter live service boom was just starting, I think people would have cut it way more slack. But the fact that this is coming after The Division especially, it's just, man, you needed to have learned from those mistakes.
Yeah.
The hardest thing to create with a loot shooter, I can imagine, is that people will burn through the content very, very quickly, and you need to constantly up the challenge. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be like the feedback that they're getting is that the enemies don't feel like they are changing
AI
enough.
Like,
they feel like they're recycled so often. The guns don't seem like they're keeping you invested in it. And it sure as hell isn't the big bad in the campaign.
Although he literally is Thanos.
But apparently
once
you off him, it sets up the struggle for the next, like, aka the downloadable content that's coming out.
Yeah, the end game.
And I really resonated badly with that. The worst thing I can think of is completing a game and then somebody just saying, yeah, if you thought that was bad, wait until you pay 15 quid more to go and get the next one. I got really annoyed at that, because I was like, how are you going to make me care about what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
And I didn't even care about what's happening now.
Your full price investment isn't worth anything. And if you spent more for the earlier edition, it's doubly not worth anything, because you've wasted your time, because you've got the worst version and they fixed everything later.
Mm.
The more you invest in the game, the more you're ripped off. And so, like, but that's like a separate kind of point. But in terms of the story stuff, they've laid out their roadmap for the rest of 2019.
Yeah.
And I do like the idea, or I quite love the idea, of a BioWare told story unfolded across a whole year, where it's like, okay, because I was going to dive into the lore for a second. It's like, here's what the Cenotaph is, here's what the whatever. There's different things that they can address that get sort of talked about in the main story. And there's a post-credit scene after the main story that says, like, here's a massive tease, basically. Here's this like thing. And so there's, you know, it's a nice way to do an unfolding story, but that's barely been communicated.
It's
not even satisfying what is there.
See, I'm always about the closed narrative. I want that cycle to end. I hate it when they go like, oh, because this thing's coming out now. Because what if this game absolutely stunk on sales? What if it never went anywhere and we ended up with just like another cliffhanger that was never patched out in DLC or expanded upon?
True.
Or even worse, didn't have enough of a following, so the developers just crapped out a bad DLC just to close that off, mm-hmm. and everyone's got an even more sour taste. Just leave it there, and then just say, there are more struggles to come, and we will unveil them as and when in separate contained narratives. I don't see what...
The weirdest thing, because the world that they've set up, I think the story's totally fine. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's very good versus evil. That's literally all it is. But I like that they actually seed the world quite nicely with like, what the anthem is. Like, the anthem is just, like, the voice of God. Like, if creation was an entity and you could hear it, it drives most people insane. And I like that as an idea. Mm. And so people are trying to control anthem and understand what it is, and that results in these different, like, this race called the Shapers and the relics and whatever, it results in the world itself being contorted and changed in different ways, which is literally their way of canonizing the idea of DLC. Because, oh, by the way, this thing just changed and now this is a big river and you need to do this. Yeah. And it's like, that's a cool way to make, you know, living DLC.
For me, that's a great idea. The idea of this world being sort of alive and like constantly shifting is great. I don't know what happens later on, but I've heard that's not... doesn't get more communicated in the story. Like, not tangibly. People will pay lip service to it, the fact that, wow, these huge cataclysmic events are going down. Uh-huh. But you never see them, and that never affects the way you play the game, which is a big point of frustration for
me. Classic age-old rule of thumb thing is show, don't tell, isn't it? Just like, if you hear about these cataclysmic events, I want to see them. I want to play through that, especially seeing as I've paid X amount for this game. I don't want to just hear about it or just see it happening unfolding in a cutscene.
Well, that was... I'm not sure if you... have you seen the cutscene very, very early on where they show you sort of like the downfall of one of the cities and it's like a bunch of javelins facing off against this army. Right. And that was such a well-directed sort of scene with such gravitas, and like it really sold me on like the epic scale of this world. Mm-hmm. And then... oh, but I feel like all I'm playing now is a footnote to that story. Yeah. Well, I would rather be playing this than whatever is occurring now.
That's something to really address, is that obviously across the marketing, they were like, don't worry, we're going to do a BioWare story. Don't worry, we've got all you guys. It's going to be, you know, like an investable single-player story, but also it's a dynamic multiplayer loot shooter. And those are obviously two things that are hard to get right. And Casey Hudson and various BioWare members talked about, like, you know, we're going to do that for the first time. We're going to mesh these things together. And they don't. Like, I think Anthem feels like a single player game, but whenever you go on a mission, you're just randomly like buddying up with people.
Yeah.
And obviously the lore would say that, well, multiple javelins defend Fort Tarsus, but there's not multiple javelins in the main Fort Tarsus area. There are in the social hub, which they bolted on. But all the cutscenes only address a single javelin, you.
And it makes you feel like you're the chosen one again. The only one that can do this. It's that, like, stop putting that gravitas and even, on one like, person.
Even like later on, like, you come up against certain boss characters and certain notable talking points and stuff, and you'll be in an isolated area where you're having a one-on-one conversation with someone, and that cutscene ends because it goes into a boss fight, and all of a sudden four guys are right next to you and you take them on together.
That's someone mentions earlier on, they're like, whoa, the freelancers, they're really rare these days, we need to rebuild it. Then you jump outside and there's 50 of them and you're like, well, this is kind of strange.
But then in the free play you can only get instance with three other people, so it's like four people in a massive open world just looking for treasure chests. It's bizarre, just empty.
The weird one is that you remember when we were all playing Red Dead Online?
Yes.
And
that 1 week where we did.
Yeah, and we were saying, like, oh, we're not too sure about the story for the online section, at least. At least they had a good way of addressing that they were four random people showing up, because it was like, hey, look, bounty hunters. That makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of bounty hunters. And look, they don't talk to each other in the posse, but they address them all as being like, hey, guys, all of you together, sort of thing. Like,
just a little thing. Like, even that makes me think that you could open the world map on your online and tell your friends where to go. You can't even set a waypoint in Anthem.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no in-game map other than the Skyrim style, like the compass bar on the top, and you can kind of, like, you know, go, okay, there's an icon over there, I'm going to go this way.
Yeah.
But the map is, like, empty.
Those little frustrations are what makes me think it was kind of, like, just rushed out, because there are so many quality of life things in this game that are just, they're just bad, or it doesn't seem finished. Like, why can't you set a waypoint?
You have a health bar, but no health statistic, and then it gets, oh, this adds 10% to health. I'm like, well, what is my health? Yeah. Like,
quantify it.
Yeah. Like, for a game that's meant to be all about stats and loot grinding and upgrading, there is actually next to no stats in the game.
Well, when it finishes the first mission and it pops up and you get your XP boost and it tells you some kind of like achievements that you've unlocked or what you've done badges, in that specific... Yeah. What do those badges mean? How do I find those things out?
You get like a player...
It's not communicated.
It says something like class-specific achievement. I'm like, okay, what was that? Did I shocked enough people?
Yeah, it's like, what? It's like,
does it do anything? Like,
I need to quickly point out that they don't even cover at all the one thing that makes the combat really, really good, which is combos.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Which is primers and detonators, which, like, again, not even covered in the tutorial, but it's the one thing that makes Anthem's combat genuinely quite unique and really fun, is that both magic and attacks get split into two categories, primers, detonators. You cover enemies in whatever substance or whatever you want on the primer side, and you detonate it on that other side, and that results in different combos, different elemental boosts, and depending on which javelin does it, that affects what happens afterwards as well. Mm. So
it's pretty much just an expansion of the Mass Effect 3 combat system.
Yes, kind
of,
yeah.
You mindset it with psi powers and then detonate it with the tech powers.
Yes. But putting that to the forefront, it's like, okay, I see the through line. I see where you came from. I see how you made that the crux of combat. And like on the Anthem YouTube channel, they point this out where it's, oh, you're going to need these combos and you need things tactically, to overcome bosses, but it's not in the game. Yeah. And it's like, okay, like you said, I don't know if it was rushed out, but my theory is that they released this bare bones, like empty filing cabinet because they're going to fill it in across 2019.
Yeah. That's
my thought.
I imagine that they've got the full game. Like they had that from the off, completely all planned out, and now they're just going like, look, I'm sorry, it's not the 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 game you wanted. It's like maybe a 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, but don't worry, stay with us. Pay us a bit more money.
That's what makes me think it's
the pay. It's the pay a bit more money. Yes. That's the bit that bothers me.
Well,
because
remember
they've got a great core gameplay.
Yes.
Like, it works.
Yeah.
Well,
I was just quickly, like, I mean, it reminds me of when Javik was taken out of Mass Effect 3. Mm. And it's like you had the first Prothean character, massive plot-centric character, or at least part of the lore was very, you know, he's a Prothean. The trilogy revolves around what the Protheans did. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you have him as a playable character, and then it was taken out and put as separate DLC. Yeah. And that had to be EA's choice, because there's so much money they can put behind, hey, just make the thing all the fans want a separate price. They did it in Star Wars Battlefront, and they did it here. And it feels like that again. It's like if you have an empty game, because there's, like I said before, there's no, like, there's one cosmetic option for each additional body part.
Yeah.
There's one more armor piece, one more leg piece, one more head piece, whatever. And, like, you know, and then there's a cosmetic DLC store, but then there's two pieces in there. And it's like, there's such an empty... they're going to plug it all in.
Like, no, it is.
I think they're trying to see how much they can get away with, how little they can get away with releasing to then plug it all in later.
But here's the thing,
there
was a game which did this before, and although it's been compared to Destiny quite a lot, for me, the biggest point of comparison is The Division. When that came out,
right.
And I thought, I had the same relationship with that as I do Anthem. I thought the the core gunplay in that was so good, and the world itself was such a joy to be in. The same with Anthem, but with that game, the cosmetic upgrades you were getting were bad. I don't want some brown gloves, right? That's not worth 10 hours. Hat. Yeah, you've got a hat. No, I shouldn't have spent 6 hours doing anything but unlocking that. The weapons were very savvy. Yeah. You got to the end of this 15-hour story, and then you destroyed a helicopter, and then it was over. Yeah. And then you were just like, well, what's the end game? And Ubisoft
do it again. That's another thing. I've got to leap in because it's baffling. It's maddening. Like they've got these little dungeons, these little the raids that you can do in Anthem. There are three of them. You have one for the whole game. The other two unlock when you finish, and that's it. You just re-roll them over and over again. Yeah, for now, because they can plug some in later. But how are you charging this much money for this?
Again, he's the problem, right? Because you put this game out and you just assume, oh, we're going to support it, it's going to get better. That's what The Division did as well. I keep going back to The Division, but when they planned their end game, they were like, right, we've got all this content coming, it'll be fine. But then they spent so much time fixing what came before that got pushed to the sidelines, and then no one was invested by the time it did come around. I'm scared Anthem's going to go down the same route, where it's promised this expansive year-long sort of set of content, but then they're going to be so concerned about fixing the issues that should have been there at launch and adding in more
base loot.
I was just going to say, for me, Anthem strikes a very similar tone, as you say, with The Division, because I see it as being a game that I will probably only really invest some time into when it's the gold edition with all of the DLC and everything added in, which will come about a year from now, the game of the year edition or whatever you want to call it this time. I'll pick that one up, I'll sit down and be like, cool, this is the game
an actual story.
Yeah, this is the game they wanted to tell.
It's just like, how much are games as a service just a different term for early access? Because this is the way this thing has been released, the amount of things they've had to fix. I mean, there's been two patches since launch. So, and one of them was their big sought after day one patch, which fundamentally changed a whole bunch of quests and altered the way the loot works. You know, things like that. It's like, are people really just being brazenly taken for suckers over the way that it's rolled out? Like, here is this empty game and we'll plug stuff in, but we want your money up front, and there's a bunch of different deluxe versions that you can get, and you know, we're going to get the payday up front, and we'll maybe give you stuff later on.
Yeah.
But in EA's case, if things don't perform, we'll probably just sever the studio anyway. So it feels really nakedly corporate.
It's difficult because, again, we've had this they've set a precedent before. A lot of people stayed with Destiny and sort of slugged through that when that wasn't a great launch, but then it became sort of a great game that people were putting hundreds and hundreds of hours in. And whereas other games, again, like The Division, where the player base just dropped off completely. So I wonder how much they've learned from those mistakes, how much they are confident that people will stick around when the data says completely different.
How much is that an assumption of what you're buying into, though? Like you were saying, like, you know, like you want a narrative to end, like a story to have a final point. Yeah. If do people know going into this that they're not getting that they know they're buying into a year's worth of rollouts?
Because the advertising for it has just led this to believe that this is the biggest game to ever launch on current day consoles as is.
Yeah.
The future plan has been something that's just been rolled out on their social media accounts. I wouldn't say that it's been publicly advertised as a huge thing. They've never said it's an expanding and growing world. They've just advertised it as the biggest world that you will ever be a part of.
And like, maybe there's a way to do a games as a service where it's the video game version of something like the MCU, and you know that you're buying into an installment in a larger canon. And like, maybe that's the way that it goes forward. But I don't think that's been remotely communicated. And just the sheer lack of content, the sheer lack of loot and guns and worthwhile reasons to keep playing. Like, Anthem plays the same after 30 seconds, 30 minutes, as it does after 30 hours. Like, you're not getting any fundamentally new ways to play or anything.
But for some people, that's fine.
There are
still people out there playing Fallout 76 who really enjoy it. That's up to them. Mm-hmm. How you choose to spend your time is up to you.
Yes,
but it's just like when the end game isn't an attractive opportunity for me, I can't.
My point isn't that what is there that works is bad. Like, I do love the combat. I love the flight. I just think things like the overheating gets in the way, and that becomes a larger comment on why have you put these restrictions in the way of this other stuff that works, which makes me think that there's a problem on the development side, and there's potentially a problem on the publisher side with EA saying, "Hey, here's a full thing. Let's siphon that off and sell it back to people across the year." That's my theory side of it.
I sort of react the same way you do, I think, Jules, with this. When I'll play Anthem, and I'll play it for, I don't know, maybe 10 hours or something, and I'll enjoy the combat, and I'll be there, but I won't engage with this game the way EA want me to, by like completely investing in this world and keep coming back and repeating missions and building my gear. At this point, like I did with Destiny, like I did with The Division, I'm just going to sort of like peace out and be like, I'll see you for Anthem 2. You know, when you fixed all these problems, I put some time into it, but I'm not engaging with this as a sort of year-long, two-year-long service.
Well, that's my early access point.
Yeah,
how
exactly,
much do they treat people just like walking cash machines? And that's literally what it is at this stage. And like the reasons that we play games, or that I think the discerning gamer plays games, is for a more worthwhile experience than what this offers. Mm. But that's the thing. That's the question mark. How many people are out there that are satisfied with what Anthem is now? And how much can they trade on that? Because I think that's just kind of... I think it's insane to accept that this is the way that a games as service game can be.
I know.
When it can be something like the MCU, if they did it way better.
Oh, what's genuinely killing me inside is that I'm seeing all this. And yeah, I'm going to go home tonight. I'm going to fly around for 2 hours and I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to forget about all the problems probably, except the loading screens, because they are a pain
in the
ass.
Well, that's what they want. They cash in on that first experience. Yeah. And the first few hours, yeah, they're brilliant. And the combat is great. The flight's great. The story's enough. It's fine. But it doesn't work on the long run. And then the more you see things get plugged into it over time, the more it's just a reminder that you bought the wrong version, or you like should have waited or whatever. And it's like, how much is that just the reality of the games industry? It's just weird.
You can
baffling.
You can tell I'm getting excited because...
yes, we should pivot into something
I know we're going to talk about a game that I really enjoy. And instead of speaking about EA cutting off publishers, we're going to be talking about cutting off arms.
Ooh.
Yes. Let's segue into something that is a full story, is a full game, at least as we hope it is, even though it's published by Activision.
I could not think of a game that is more distant to Anthem than Sekiro.
It is literally like, the other side of the coin.
It's a single-player, narrative-focused experience that... rewards careful, tactful combat, and at the same time is beautifully rich in
its own. It feels passionately made.
Oh, guys,
tell me more.
Played Sekiro.
I didn't just play Sekiro. So basically, there was an event at the Metro Centre here up in Newcastle, sponsored by Game. And they let us play up into the first boss, the Corrupted Monk. Mm-hmm. And I beat the boss.
Which you were the first person to beat, weren't you, Jill?
He hasn't shut up about beating the boss.
I was the first person to defeat the boss, so I was very happy about it. Won a little t-shirt. Yeah. And the best way to describe this game is there are so few criticisms that I can level at what I was shown.
Okay.
That it's making me even more worried about the actual release. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just because it was so good.
It's like love, you're falling in love, and it's like there must be a flaw. There's got to be something.
Because it's like when we were looking at it, I definitely think it might have been a vertical slice of gameplay because there were a few sections that seemed to be set up specifically just to showcase some elements.
Right.
And I wonder if the finished game will have them laid out in a different manner, because you start off in a sort of overlooking a base. You kill some guys, go through a tutorial style stage where it teaches you how to hug onto walls and like assassinate people tenchu style, which absolutely brilliant, using the hookshot arm to swing across like Spider-Man. Then things suddenly change. You come to a bridge and you can't pass through into the fort. Instead, you have to jump down into a ravine and a giant albino blind snake appears. And I'm talking like huge, unbelievably
huge.
I've
seen the picture of it.
And it's you have to go into a stealth section. So it mixes, you've gone from the action, the tutorial stage, to a full-on stealth section now.
What happens if you get seen?
You get seen, you get munched. Like it's unfortunately like, well,
okay.
I think that I didn't actually fail it. I'm just saying. But I think that the guy said that if you fail, it's not going to end well.
Okay.
And you finally get through, and that's when you fight the Corrupted Monk, a woman who has a giant, I want to call it a naginata, which is like a long blade on a pole.
Yeah.
And the boss battle is like the best parts of Dark Souls 3.
Okay.
With the speed and aggression required from Bloodborne.
So like the big, over-the-top, like seismic, powerful enemy, but then you're kind of, you're matching it beat for beat, staying on your toes.
See, the way that there's so many ways to actually beat this boss.
Right.
I went in very much from a Dark Souls mindset of, I'm just going to try dodging and see if it gets...
That's what I would have done,
And the guy was like, you're in for a tough time. Like, because you need to use the actual fact that you've got a jump button so readily available and hookshot your way out of there whenever things get...
Can you block in it?
You can block, and the parry system is where he said I should have gone.
Right.
Because there are two types of attacks in the game. You've got regular ones, and then there are certain attacks that have a symbol that appear, like a Japanese character.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get hit with those, they are unblockable, and it will do a lot of damage to you. So and it highlights it in red. So again, it's a bit more simplified than maybe the Dark Souls and Bloodborne because of the fact that it gives the player a bit of warning whether they're unblockable or not, whereas in those games, you just get hit. You're dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you parry the other ones, though, it builds up a stagger meter on the top. And if you do that, it breaks their poise and means that you can go in to attack them.
Nice.
Because there's two ways to defeat enemies. either chip away at their health, which takes an absolute age and it's not recommended, or break their guard by either powering them and opening them up, and you'll get a little red icon over them and it'll be a one-hit insta-kill.
Right.
That's really interesting.
And it's utterly brilliant.
No matter if they're on full health or anything.
Well, there's little diamonds up above their name, and that will represent how many health bars they've got.
Right.
And it's unbelievable how you look at it and think, no, surely this general who's got like two health bars here and I've just taken one off with that thing, like, he's not going to... How is this a challenge? Sort of thing. But then every single time you knock a bit of a pip of health off, their moveset completely changes or adds in new elements to it. Like the corrupted monk, she disappears into the bridge that you're fighting on,
right,
and three ghost figures, and the whole room fills with smog. They come at you and chase you.
Right.
Got to survive that thing. And you go, okay, cool. So that's her new trick for that one.
Yeah.
Take it down to the next one. And she starts spinning around like a whirlwind, like the dancer from Dark Souls 3. And I'm like... And then she sinks into the ground. And then she gets all the boost in power and stuff. And you're like, okay, this is still incredibly difficult.
So, okay, let's just quickly, because you can go to the other video that you did with Rach for the full breakdown of like all your thoughts on the day.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that's like, the thing that strikes me immediately is the locomotion. Like you have a jump button and you have a different way to like jump around. Does it feel more like just a platinum style action game now?
The freedom of mobility is fantastic. I mean, I made a right tit of myself the first couple of times because it was like, go along this ledge. And I was like, what's that? Jump? Oh.
Well, you wouldn't think of it, though.
But it was, it's really fun because you can use this to completely evade some enemies that are attacking you because they don't have the same sort of freedom of mobility that you do, at least in the demo. So if I was in trouble, I'll just look up, grab onto the roof and escape out there.
Tenchu style.
But to balance that, there are loads of ranged enemies around, making sure that if they see you, they're going to take pot shots at you. So it's a balance of trying to mix stealth, action. It's really well done.
That kind of like you mentioned there when you were dropping down into like different kind of levels of this level. There seems to be a huge emphasis on sort of verticality. Like kind of Dark Souls you didn't have. You were just sort of very, like you said, locomotion. You were very grounded in those games. How does that change not only the action, but sort of like just the layout and how you get through these...
I mean,
levels?
The one thing I'd say that I absolutely adore about the first Dark Souls is that if you put every single piece of environment that you go together, you can actually make a map that makes sense geographically.
Yeah, yeah.
You can understand where you are in the place of this world. I will say that's possibly Sekiro's one weakness, or at least of the demo that I've experienced, in that I wouldn't be able to say if this giant fortress is here... I couldn't say how me moving down here relates to that or how it makes sense.
Right, right.
It feels much more like a level designed for entertainment's sake than maybe believability's sake, which is no bad thing because the player, I believe, should always come first. But it does mean that there are certain situations where you're like, oh, this is a bit strange.
Right.
I was going to ask on the stealth front, do they have like enemy awareness? Because you can do stealth kills.
Yes.
So if you hide, they go back to their
patrols
again?
They've got the classic sort of semicircle ring with an arrow pointing where they think you are, and it turns yellow to red if they see you.
That's that's literally some Tenchu type business.
And it's absolutely game brilliant. For. You can like hug walls as well to let enemies pass you. And there's this one absolute bastard who's like hiding out in this little outcrop, and he's got like what appears to be a giant like pot and pan, and if he sees you, he starts banging on this.
Everyone comes running
on it, but not just everyone. A giant man who's like got his hands in like a stocks. He's like the huge.
I think I see this.
And he looks like he acts like a mimic. Like he will toe punt you all over the place. But he's like 20 foot tall. It's mad.
I love that they're experimenting so much because I like Bloodborne, but I love Dark Souls, and so I always thought that Bloodborne didn't play things too safe, but it wasn't. That much of a differentiation. This feels like them going, we're going to completely change the foundations and you're not even going to play it the same way. So I guess it's only a couple of weeks or something.
It comes out on the 22nd of March. Yeah, so it's not long to wait at all. And if this is a taste of things to come, then it's easily going to be getting a high ranking from me. I like, a lot of people have been complaining the fact that it doesn't have online.
A
lot of people were very, very keen on teaming up with people to do it. But for me, I didn't really utilize the PvP stuff, and I think that Dark Souls will always have a fan base. People will always play that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that the developers this time around were just like, let's just deliver a different experience. Like, they might add multiplayer in a future date, and also the fact that you have your one weapon.
Yeah.
They've said that you will never get another weapon. You'll only upgrade the arms that you have.
I like that.
I actually really prefer, because we started out with three. You've got a shuriken firing one with long range stuff, or just knocking enemies off posts and stuff like that. Then you had an axe that looked like the Switch weapons from Bloodborne, which could break shields, which was incredibly useful. And finally, one that's set out a wall of flame that if you attacked through straight afterwards would set your blade on fire and you'd get a fire buff for the next 30 seconds.
I hope that's an indication of different elemental buffs that you can get, like Zelda style, where the actual world has elements you can play with.
That does kind of sound like an extension of Bloodborne, because in that game, although it still had quite a decent amount of weapons to choose from, it was scaled back massively from like Dark Souls, and it was more how you use the weapons rather than the different weapons themselves. And I kind of like that.
Which lets them balance combat with.
I like that more, I think, especially if you're trying to differentiate yourself from the things that came before.
So yes, for now, this state of 2019, we have the complete madness that is Anthem that will hopefully get together eventually, but you never know.
Yeah.
And the pretty immaculate, fully formed world playing from day one, Sekiro.
I mean, we'll be bringing out the review as soon as we get our hands on it.
Yes, but let us know what you think down in the comments below if you've been playing Anthem or if you're looking forward to Sekiro. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Thank you, goodbye.
And joined by Jules Gill.
Bye, guys.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.